The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Annette Kogal from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the AARP Modern Maturity magazine and from Thrivent, and maybe I'll throw in a surprise at the end. Well, welcome back, everyone. Good to be with you. Hope you've had a great week. And we're going to start right off with an article from Thrivent magazine. It's entitled, We Are Family, How to Juggle Everyone's Needs When You're Raising Kids and Helping Aging Parents. Whom do you think needs your help this minute, later today, or next week? If the answer includes a combination of my parent, my child, or even my grandparent, welcome to the sandwich generation. Those who have a living parent age 65 or older, and who either are raising a child or supporting a grown child. With kids on the bottom and parents stacked on top, these family sandwiches often come with a side order of rising stress, conflicting commitments, and increasing financial worries. It often can't be helped, even if your kids are self-sufficient and your parents take very good care of themselves. There is still a sense of responsibility you can feel as you help your kids grow and watch your parents age. Here are some helpful tips for managing it all as you balance everyone's needs, including your own. Be realistic. Loriana and Anthony DePaz, Thrivent members in Tampa, Florida, refer to their multi-generational family situation as a double-decker sandwich. Daughter Elizabeth, 18, is off to her first year of college, and they're home with 13-year-old Olivia while running their own small business. Not to mention, Loriana also works part-time for their church. They're also providing support to both sets of parents, a grandfather and an elderly aunt. Our parents have done so much for us, Loriana says. It's important to take care of them as much as we can. We have not had to help with their medical bills yet, but we're aware that that time is coming. Before you decide what kind of financial assistance you can provide to others in your extended family, you should assess your own situation to get a clear idea of your cash flow needs and retirement goals. This will help you establish boundaries between what you want to do and what you're able to do for others. The DePaz family knows that it's important they stay focused on the financial goals they've set for themselves. So they're diligent about keeping to their plans for savings and expenses, both small and big, like college for their kids. Well, they once were happy just to have a $1,000 emergency fund. They now have been able to put money their money toward investments they had never made before, such as life insurance and an IRA. Thrivent financial professional Jim Moore in Brandon, Florida, has helped them achieve their personal goals while also figuring out how they can best support their parents and other aging relatives. Have a frank discussion. Moore suggests sandwiched families have a talk to get a clear view of the dependent parent's total financial picture, from expenses to sources of income, investment accounts, beneficiary designations, and insurance. You also want to find out what legal documents they have in place, such as wills, trusts, and health care directives. What is the sandwich generation? 47% of adults ages 40 to 59 have a parent age 65 plus and are either raising a young child or financially supporting a grown child. 15% of adults provide financial support to a parent 65 plus and a child. So, while important, these discussions can be difficult. about having frank discussions. Tough conversations with your parent or parents might begin with acknowledging that one parent is going to outlive the other, Moore says. So there needs to be a discussion about financial and logistical issues surrounding that event. He also recommends families discuss how they hope to cover any assisted living costs or in-home nursing care. If parental finances are limited, Moore suggests extending those conversations to include siblings and extended family members. Asking others to pitch in on care can be challenging, he says. Most siblings have their own idea about who will take care of what, whether it be financial or giving actual care to a parent. But until a plan is assembled with everyone's input, you could be setting yourself up for interfamily strife. You also should contact your county social services office to obtain information on the services and programs that may be available. Use tools. You don't want to use your retirement savings to support your kids or your parents. That could put your own retirement future in jeopardy. And once you're in retirement, you no longer have an income source to replenish those dollars. You also sacrifice any tax-deferred growth that those retirement assets might have generated. Loriana and Anthony have used a 529 college savings plan to put money aside for their older child who started college this year. The plan offers tax-deferred growth and federal income tax-free withdrawals to the extent the funds are used to pay qualified educational expenses. We didn't always have the funds to contribute, but we're glad that we did. So when we could, because now it's covering a portion of Elizabeth's dorm costs. The family also has used a flexible spending account, FSA, to help with major health care expenses like braces. It lets you pay for eligible out-of-pocket medical care costs with pre-tax dollars. Even something as simple as envelopes can help you manage your money. My husband and I create a weekly budget that includes setting aside money toward our emergency fund, travel, kids' college, and upcoming expenses, Loriana says. We set some money aside in a miscellaneous envelope. The kids have learned that once that envelope is empty, there is no more money to spend that week. Strive for balance. Jody and Andy Lamon, along with sons Greg, 17, and Thomas, 15, recently moved to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, to be closer to both of their families. Andy's parents are in their 70s, and Jody's are in their 80s. Andy, who was the pastor of a church in Georgia, left his congregation and now works in the family business, a jewelry store. From the beginning, they were clear that they needed to set healthy boundaries to help them create balance in their lives. Jody says she's been purposeful about spending time with parents, time together as a couple, and time with the children. And they're working to set financial goals with their sons. Van Doubleday, a thriving financial professional in Savannah, Georgia, helped the family. In addition to the major educational expenses we have coming up, we also want to have the resources available to take vacations and to invest in ministries we want to support, Andy says. They work hard to live lean. We live on less, which we hope will allow us to invest more in God's kingdom, she says. Stay strong. Experts who work with people experiencing this pulled in all directions challenge offer some sound advice. I try to normalize this sandwich generation situation for clients because a lot of people are going through the same thing, says Thrivent member Tim Chemnitz, a pastor at Mount Olive Evangelical Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, and counselor at Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Services Satellite Branch in Germantown, Wisconsin. He urges clients to keep the faith. We want to take good care of our faith so that it can take good care of us when that faith is tested. Thrivent member Ed Melinat is a marriage, family, and child counselor at Hope Counseling Center in Silicon Valley, in San Jose, California. It's important to be realistic that this toil and trouble are part of life, he says. Peace is arrived at by having a relationship with God in the midst of turmoil. Melinat urges those feeling stressed to reach out for help. No one can do this alone. All right, and now from Thrivent also, we're going to have one more article, and it's entitled Finding Common Ground. Take these three steps to help you and your partner resolve money conflicts. In the early years of their marriage, Mike and Cindy Parker were on opposite ends of the spectrum when it came to money. Mike was brilliant with wisely handling our money, and I was brilliant with spending it, Cindy says. He'd have the budget, and I thought that as long as we had the money, we should be able to spend what we want. The Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania couple isn't unique when it comes to having different opinions about how each spends money. Many couples struggle with getting on the same page with finances. So as a couple, how do you figure out the steps to take, even the questions to ask, to find agreement on money issues? Well, one, define your values. It's nearly impossible to talk about money without talking about values. It sets the foundation of how your decision-making process works, says Eric Lehman, a Thrivent financial professional in LaGrange, Texas. I like to ask questions like, what brings your heart to life? What's important to you? How you answer these questions often ties back to how you were raised. We all grew up in an environment that shaped how we think about money, says Jamie French, the Parker's Thrivent financial professional in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. What was your experience with money growing up? How did your family make decisions? And how is that forming your decisions about money? Couples need to talk about their experiences, and it may help to talk with your financial professional. These conversations can be tough, and there may be disagreement, but they're important and healthy. A financial professional can set up the questions and help you dive deep into your faith and values, Lehman says. When talking to couples, we help look for common ground and agreement, and we can start to build from there. The Parkers had different childhood money experiences. Based on his experience, Mike believed in having a little fun after the bills were paid, but the majority of his money should go to savings and investments. Cindy thought the money left over from bills was okay for spending. They were several years into their 21-year marriage when a tough conversation helped them begin to understand one another's money perceptions. Mike shared with Cindy his hopes for retirement and what he felt the couple needed to do to get there. He was patient and he presented the facts, Cindy says. I realized it wasn't fair. He was working so hard and I was going out spending money on things we didn't need. Prioritize is step two. Once you've identified what's important to you, it's time to prioritize. It's clear that things like food, clothing, and shelter top the needs list. But even with these needs, there can be wants. Hamburger or prime rib, rent an apartment or buy a house. It's really hard to say that any category is an indisputable need when there are so many options within it, French says. And where do spending categories like giving to church, buying a vehicle, taking a vacation, or caring for a loved one fit in? It's also very important to understand our own tendencies, French says. For example, both spouses may be more savers than spenders, but they may differ in how they spend. One may prefer material things, while the other prefers experiences. These are important conversations to have, he says. Our powers of rationalization are amazing. We can justify a want as a need so easily. French uses a resource from a Thrivent workshop for teens with his kids to help them prioritize needs and wants. But it also can work for adults, called the Gotta Have It gauge. It suggests you create a list of things you want or need. Run each item through a list of questions, including, do I need this? If not, do I at least really want it? When you're done, rewrite your spending list in order of priority. A written budget is essential for the Parkers, who also try to have monthly budget meetings. Cindy's now beyond where I am when it comes to sorting out needs and wants, Mike says. We're not cheap, but we do prioritize what we really want. For the Parkers, tithing, insurance, and retirement savings, for example, are needs. Money is always set aside for these items. But there is also a list of wants, and sometimes Cindy needs to transfer between categories to meet an unexpected need. But they're firm about living within their means. When the money's gone, it's gone. We're not going to put it on a credit card, Mike says, and sometimes it really stinks to not get what you want. Step three is compromise. What happens if your priorities change for a season or forever? Or if you and your spouse just can't agree? It's time for compromise. This is where the toughest conversations happen, Layman says. It's where we draw the line to connect values and reality. And it's where we go back to our fundamental values. Sometimes the compromise is within your spending plan. What can I give up to do something else? But other times, you have to find the middle ground with your significant other. The Parkers have two sons, 17 and 16. Our boys hear us having those conversations as we wrestle back and forth on budget items, Cindy says. They see it in action, but they also see that if you don't control the money, it will control you. With their sons nearing the end of high school, Mike and Cindy have chosen to compromise their original spending plan. They wanted to create some additional family time, a trip across the country for a few years ago, a cruise this year. These were big dollar items for us, so that meant things from other categories needed to be cut down, Mike says, and the two had to come to agreement on it. It's not that we're going without, but we're shifting to do what we want at this time. All right, this next article is from the University of California Berkeley School of Public Health. What you should know about acute pancreatitis. Acute pancreatitis sends 275,000 Americans to the hospital each year, and the incidence of this painful and potentially deadly condition appears to be rising in older men and women. It's not clear why acute pancreatitis is on the rise, but it may have to do with the population's increasing age and the steady rise in type 2 diabetes, which is a risk factor for pancreatitis. What's more, recent studies suggest that the condition is often more severe among older adults, particularly the elderly, which makes prompt treatment critical. What is pancreatitis? Pancreatitis is inflammation of the pancreas, a gland that's about 6 inches long and resides behind your stomach. The pancreas makes digestive enzymes that flow through the pancreatic duct to the small intestine. These enzymes, along with bile from the gallbladder, break down many of the foods we eat for use as energy by the body. The pancreas also makes insulin and glucagon, hormones that help regulate blood glucose or sugar levels. A bout of acute pancreatitis almost always requires a hospital stay to replenish fluids and rest the pancreas. Many cases are mild and subside within about a week, but complications can develop, especially in moderate to severe cases. You can become dehydrated and your blood pressure may drop, which can damage organs close to the pancreas and adversely affect functioning of more distant organs such as the heart, lungs, and kidneys. Other complications include a collection of fluid near the pancreas, pseudocyst, an infection or an abscess, and a bleeding in the pancreas. Some of these complications can lead to shock and even death. Acute pancreatitis is fatal in about 1 in 20 patients. Pancreatitis symptoms. The hallmark symptom of acute pancreatitis is severe pain in the upper abdomen, often on the right side, which sometimes radiates to the mid-back and may be relieved by leaning forward. The pain might first occur after meals, especially after eating fatty foods. Eventually, the pain may become constant. Other symptoms of acute pancreatitis include nausea and vomiting, shortness of breath, fever, abdominal bloating, jaundice. In older adults, stomach pain may be less intense than in younger persons. Pain may also appear later in the course of the condition. What causes pancreatitis? The two most common causes of acute pancreatitis are gallstones and alcohol consumption, usually in excess, accounting for up to 3/4 of all cases. Gallstones. These small, pebble-like masses can travel from the gallbladder and down the common bile duct and obstruct the drainage of the pancreas. Gallstones are the most common cause of acute pancreatitis among older adults. Heavy alcohol use. A long history of moderate to heavy drinking causes 1/4 to 1/3 of all acute pancreatitis attacks. The mechanism as to why this occurs is not clear, but genetic factors and the way alcohol is metabolized likely play a role. Cigarette smoking increases the risk of alcohol-induced pancreatitis. Less commonly, acute pancreatitis can be triggered by certain medications. High levels of triglycerides, usually above 1,000 milligrams per deciliter. Trauma or injury to the pancreas, a duodenal ulcer that pushes into the pancreas and causes inflammation, or a complication from a procedure called endoscopic retrograde cholangiopancreatography, ECRP, which is used to diagnose and treat diseases of the pancreatic and bile ducts. A family history of pancreatitis can also be a factor. In rare cases, pancreatic cancer could be causing pancreatitis, especially in a patient who is over 40 or has a family history of pancreatic cancer. A Swedish study last year in the American Journal of Gastroenterology found that 70% of 769 patients with pancreatic cancer had a previous episode of acute pancreatitis. Cancer risk was highest within 2 months of pancreatitis and faded over time, leading the researchers to suggest that acute pancreatitis may, on occasion, be an early symptom of pancreatic cancer. It's important for doctors to try to identify the underlying cause of pancreatitis to prevent its return. However, no cause can be found in about 20% of cases. And why age matters. Older adults who develop pancreatitis have more severe bouts of the condition and an increased risk of death than younger adults, according to several recent studies. One likely reason is that older people often have coexisting medical conditions that may be exacerbated by pancreatitis or make them more susceptible to complications, And because older adults don't always have the classic intense abdominal pain, or they have symptoms that are less obvious and tend to overlap with those of other conditions, a diagnosis might be delayed. A study in the April 2019 issue of the Scandinavian Journal of Gastroenterology reported that patients older than 65 in one Swedish hospital required longer hospital stays and were significantly more likely to end up in the intensive care unit than younger patients. Roughly 7% of older patients with severe acute pancreatitis died, compared to 2% of their younger counterparts. Treating acute pancreatitis. If you develop acute pancreatitis, you'll be closely monitored in the hospital and given fluids intravenously. You'll also be offered medication to relieve any abdominal pain. If pain, nausea, vomiting prevent you from eating for a few days, you may need a feeding tube. If you have gallstones, you may need ECRP to remove the gallstones or surgery to remove your gallbladder to prevent a recurrence. You may need to have collections of fluid drained or a course of antibiotics to treat infectious complications. You'll also need to stop drinking alcohol and follow a nutritious low-fat diet. Your doctor will address other factors that may have led to your pancreatitis to prevent future reoccurrences, such as treating high triglycerides. And finally, certain medications may spark acute pancreatitis. It's challenging, though, for doctors to pinpoint a drug that may be causing the attack, particularly in older adults who may be taking multiple drugs. They can develop from weeks to months after you begin taking a drug. Examples of drugs commonly associated with acute pancreatitis include angiotensin-converting enzyme, ACE inhibitors, azathioprine, 6-mercaptopurine, valproate, sulfa-containing drugs such as celecoxib, hydrochlorothiazide, furosemide, gliburide, and sumatriptan, corticosteroids, tetracycline, and mesalamine. Well, I'm going to leave you with three quotes from Abraham Lincoln. Better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak out and remove all doubt. And here's another one. I love this one. If I were two-faced, would I be wearing this one? And the last one from good old Abe. The best thing about the future is that it comes one day at a time. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Make it a great week, and we'll see you next week. Take care.